It's another move to expand Jacksonville's human rights ordinance. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to catch up on all our shows through the WJCT app. Just ahead, a look at the latest attempt to pass the updated HRO. You can get on the line now with your opinion at 549-2937. Then later, a new exhibit honoring the life of Anne Frank at the Museum of Science and History. We'll tell you about it. Plus, it's going green on the show today. Fleet farming, new to the First Coast. Learn what that is. All of that ahead this hour. But first this morning, supporters are hoping the third time will be the charm to expand Jacksonville's human rights ordinance to cover the LGBT community. A bill to do just that was introduced last night at the Jacksonville City Council meeting. It included a long line of supporters and opponents who appeared during public comment to voice their opinion. Now, a vote by the council isn't expected until next month. But in the meantime, both business and faith leaders are lobbying hard on the HRO. This morning, we welcome two of them. Here in studio, Darnell Smith, Market President with Florida Blue and Board Chair of the Jacks Chamber. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Also with us, Pastor R.L. Gundy of Mount Sinai Baptist Church. Good to see you.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. What do you think of this third attempt to pass an updated human rights ordinance to include LGBT citizens in Jacksonville? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, weigh in on Facebook. Darnell Smith, let's begin with you. As I mentioned, both the business and faith communities are making their voices heard as supporters hope this third time might be the charm to convince the city council to support this legislation. You're the board chair of Jacksonville Chamber. You're also a senior leader at Florida Blue, and you are a visible spokesperson on the pro side of the HRO. Can you give us your view on why business leaders are coming out so strongly in support of this?
Absolutely. First of all, we believe that it is simply the right thing to do, to provide protections to all individuals, whether they're residents or visitors of our great city, to make certain that they have protections from discrimination. That's the first thing. Beyond that, and we think very important, from a business perspective, we are certain that we cannot achieve our economic potential if we do not have these protections. We have a number of companies that we deal with who are looking at our city. They love the things that we have, the great and natural resources, the talent that we do have here, all of the wonderful things about our city. And with that, they share with us through a number of conversations that they'd like to know where we are on it. And the good thing is we share with them that we are working on this particular issue. And sometimes that's good enough to be able to share that with them, that we are working on it. But it is clear to a number of them that it is important for them to bring their employees to Jacksonville, that we have an expanded, comprehensive HRO that provide protections from discrimination for all persons.
It's 549-2937 to join us. The updated HRO would protect LGBT citizens from discrimination in the areas of jobs, housing, and public accommodations. Currently, you can be fired in this community if you are gay. You can be refused service in a restaurant, denied a hotel room, things like that. Now, Pastor Gundy, the business community is speaking mainly with one voice on this, saying that companies can't attract young people and the most talented people to Jacksonville if we are perceived to be an intolerant city. The faith community is not speaking with one voice. There are certainly supporters and opponents of this measure. You are one of the pastors that is lobbying city council to vote yes. Why is that?
Well, it's a simple process. I'm glad to announce that where we had some struggles in the faith community in the past, we've since spoke with them, we've since lobbied them, we've since shared with them, prayed with them. And as of last night, about 6 o'clock, we actually have 200 faith community, faith leaders, pastors who have come on board to support the HRO. So we are not where we used to be by a long shot. I think that we've gotten people over a lot of the fears. They understand that the bill will protect the churches. It was always a provision there, but I don't think that was very clear. You've got to come to this table with a pure heart and a clear conscience when you're making decisions. And it does not impact the churches nowhere near the way they thought it would have from the very beginning.
This bill would exempt religious institutions and businesses with fewer than 15 employees. So there are carve-outs in the legislation.
Yes. That was one of the things that they were concerned about. So they put it into legislation. So I don't see why there would be a concern about that at this particular point in time from the faith community. I'm happy to really announce and know that these 200 faith leaders who've come on board, that's very important.
Here is a little bit of a testimony about this from Parvez Ahmed of UNF and the city's Human Rights Commission, perhaps the most prominent Muslim leader in Jacksonville, who says that his faith had originally dictated that he not support an updated human rights ordinance. Take a listen.
There is so much misunderstanding and fear around the transgender community. It stems from the fact that most people do not know somebody who is transgender, and we tend to fear that which we don't know. So any push for equality for all citizens of Jacksonville has to be inclusive of the transgender community. Gender identity expressions have to be included as part of the progression of equality that we all expect. We as a human race, we're beginning to understand this issue much better today than we had even a few years ago. And the fact that people do express gender in different ways, we need to be open-minded to listen to their voices and include them as part of our campaign for equal rights for all citizens.
Okay, and that's Parvez Ahmed talking about how he has evolved in his thinking on the HRO, in particular with regard to the transgender community. Now, this measure, Darnell Smith, does include the T in the LGBT acronym. That had been a sticking point in the past for some politicians. This covers gender identity and expression, meaning that if you're transgender in Jacksonville, this legislation would mean you cannot be discriminated against. How important is that T to the business leaders such as yourself?
We think it's extremely important. When we say that every person should be protected from discrimination, it includes everyone. So for us, we certainly understood the arguments that folks have made regarding simply focusing on LGB and not focusing on LGBT, but it doesn't get us there. It doesn't allow us to truly move forward with what we believe is extremely important, that is protections for every person. And so we didn't consider it long. We made it really clear. We will include LGBT, and that is what we put forth in the law.
Now, this bill would not require businesses to change their bathroom signage to gender-neutral restrooms. That had became a huge controversy up in North Carolina, Pastor Gundy. It was called the HB2 bill, and it ended up having a huge backlash for the state of North Carolina.
I don't understand. We go into hospitals and places today, and you have bathrooms that have both male and female gender on it. You go into the bathroom, you lock the door. I mean, in our churches, I mean, if I have a place where I have someone who's disabled, and I only have one place that I had to make sure that they go in there, when they go, both male and female can go in there. So I think it's back to, I like Ahmed used the right term, and I mentioned it briefly, we're fighting fears of the unknown. But we can't be in the faith community and discriminate against people. It's just not morally or ethically correct for us to discriminate against anyone for any reason.
You need 10 votes to win passage of the HRO. It failed in 2012. Councilman Tommy Azuri tried again a few years later, then withdrew the bill. Now, Azuri, Councilman Jim Love, and Councilman Aaron Bowman are sponsoring this bill. So that's three guaranteed yeses. Can you get to 10 yes votes on a 19-member body?
We're optimistic. And so the great thing about our city council here in Jacksonville, they really listen to the citizens of Jacksonville. And so they're giving everybody a chance to come forward and share their thoughts and their viewpoints, whether that be in person, email, telephone. And so we're optimistic. We're working really hard to give the information that we think is best for Jacksonville.
And lots of, we're getting lots of feedback, calls, emails, Facebook comments, and more as we take your calls on this third attempt to update the HRO in Jacksonville. Let's go to the phones right now. It's 549-2937 to connect with Darnell Smith of Florida Blue and the Chamber and Pastor R.L. Gundy of Mount Sinai Baptist Church. Margareta is in San Marco. Margaret, good morning.
Okay, it's just Margaret.
Oh, typo. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I've stood in opposition to it, and I was there again last night speaking against it. My biggest concern with all of it is the conscience protection of people who may be forced, as has already happened in some cities where these HROs are in place, that people in business situations, maybe in medium-sized businesses, are forced to promote and propagate and cooperate in spreading a message that goes directly contrary to their conscience and their beliefs. We, at least I as a Christian, would not ask a gay printer to be forced by force of law under punitive sanctions to publish a tract that declares homosexuality to be an abomination if he doesn't want to. I would go to a Christian printer if I wanted to publish something like that, which I've never done. But I would go to a Christian printer who could do that without a conflict of conscience or of his own values. But in the cities where these ordinances are in place, again and again there are cases of people who are in careers where their work involves promoting or crafting a message, like advertising executives, florists and bakers who have to put message cakes and so on, publishers, printers, graphic designers, people in trades where the message is the medium, and they are forced to act against their own values and beliefs in order to promote a message that's contrary to what they believe God requires of them. Nobody should have to choose between their livelihood and their faith and conscience. That's
all right.
My biggest concern.
Thanks, Margaret. Thanks for that. Darnell.
Sure, and thanks very much, Margaret. And we certainly understand those things exist today, whether we have the HRO bill passed or not. Those things can occur right here in Jacksonville. So that's not the driver. What we're looking at is, once again, and I'll continue to harp on this because it's really important that everybody focus on the matter that at hand. We want protections from discrimination for all individuals, whether it be individuals visiting Jacksonville or living in Jacksonville, when it comes to employment, housing, and public accommodations.
So this bill wouldn't her concern about being forced to bake a cake for a gay couple and you are opposed to homosexuality, this is not that.
This is not that. And once again, you know, it happens anywhere in the world, certainly in America, that someone can bring about a lawsuit, et cetera. This is focusing on the things I just indicated. And so I'll continue to bring folks back to it because there are a lot of fears that are out there that folks are going to certainly put forth. But that's not what this is all about.
Let's go to Wills in Atlantic Beach. Jam lines on the HRO third attempt to pass this morning. Wills, good morning.
Good morning to all of you. I was at City Hall yesterday evening. I support the HRO, and I do for a number of reasons. First, it's a just thing to do, and all of us, secondly, must fight for equality for all of us in this nation. To judge a person solely on their sexual orientation would be, once again, to judge me because I'm African-American. It is incumbent upon all of us to understand that there needs to be, and there was at one time, a separation of church and state in this country. I throw my wholehearted support behind the HRO, and I will until we have an HRO in Jacksonville. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Pastor Gundy, a moment ago you said faith leaders have evolved quite a bit on this issue over the last several years here in Jacksonville. What about the callers comment that separation of church and state should be paramount here. Certainly, the faith community has had a large influence on our local political leadership in voting no in the past.
Well, you always have people lobbying for what they believe in. Unfortunately, we are faced with the issue where unless the church, in many cases, stand up against the vows of evil, the things that exist in the society, when the church does not speak out against inequality, when the church does not speak out against discrimination, when the church does not speak out against racism, and then it sort of solidifies the attitude of the political arena, or solidifies the attitude of the business arena. And here, in this case, we now have 200 people in the faith community and the business community trying to say, listen, we should not be facing this. We should not be discriminating against anybody when it comes to jobs, housing, and public accommodations. It's just, it doesn't make any sense that we would do that, and we say we are people of faith. I don't see how anyone can say that they're a person of faith and discriminate. Let me make it clear. I spoke with Pastor Brunson of First Baptist in his chambers, and he said, Pastor Gundy, I know that I have gay people in my church, but I would never discriminate against them. But to say that and then fight against the bill to give people housing, jobs, and public accommodations doesn't sound quite right to me. So I'm trying to figure out, how do we get a happy medium here and we support one another?
How do you also talk to someone who has a firmly held belief that homosexuality is a sin and a choice? That is a point of view that younger people and certainly most of the business leaders in this city reject. They're far more accepting of homosexuality. Here are a couple of comments on our Facebook page. If the HRO doesn't pass this time, it will secure Jacksonville's reputation as just a large hick town. Here's another comment. Not only is protecting vulnerable people the right thing to do, we need to compete with other cities like Tampa, St. Pete, Orlando. They have these protections. Too many of our most innovative young people leave for those other cities because they were forward-thinking, where Jacksonville just appears to be stuck in a hateful past. But if you sit down with a person of faith and say your beliefs are wrong and hateful, that isn't always the best way to convince them come around to your point of view.
Well, you don't have to tell them that it's wrong and hateful, but you do have to say from a moral perspective that sin is sin. And you have to say there's no degree of sin. Adultery is sin. Fornication is sin. We're not talking about the practice of homosexuality. We're talking about giving people the rights to have a job, the right to have housing, and the right to have public accommodations. We're not trying to address the issue of sin here.
From our perspective, certainly the business community, we know that folks have their beliefs. And in fact, in speaking to a number of faith leaders, it's been really clear to me that they thought we were trying to take away their religious liberties, their ability to be able to practice their belief system. And so we talked about what would be the right thing to do. And so it led to us removing from the bill that faith organizations, religious organizations and institutions would be a part of the bill. We excluded religious institutions from that and all of their affiliated organizations, schools, et cetera. And so we're listening. We're understanding that folks are feeling as though we are trying to take things away from them. That is not what this does. I bring us back. This is simply about protecting people from discrimination. And that's it.
If it fails, a third attempt, are you concerned with what our commenter on Facebook writes, that we will have secured our reputation as just a large hick town?
I wouldn't go that far, and I certainly understand that person's perspective there. There are a lot of folks who will think that we are not a progressive city, but I believe otherwise. I do believe when I look at the practices of what is happening in Jacksonville today, when you look at our faith organizations, they are doing so many great things to protect people, to make certain that people are being taken care of. So those things are happening. Our practices are paying off, and we're simply legislating, enacting a law that we believe certainly demonstrates who we really are, and that is what this is about.
Let's go to Jennifer on the South Side. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking your call. I always enjoy listening to the show, and I think this
Thanks.
Is an important discussion. I just wanted to say I consider myself a devout Christian, and I used to struggle with this issue, and I used to think that this type of an ordinance was an attempt to give additional rights to a particular group. And I have come to understand that as Christians, our job is not to judge. Our job is to love. And it's to love everyone. And I think particularly in the current political climate, an ordinance like this is such a necessary thing, if only as a reminder that everyone should be entitled to basic human rights. And just to kind of pick up on something that the pastor said, we're all sinners saved by grace. And we shouldn't judge because someone sins differently than we do. So hopefully maybe someone that is hearing the show and listening to this, that will help them maybe put things in perspective. And when they're saying that businesses are considering whether Jacksonville has a human rights ordinance in deciding whether to relocate to Jacksonville, you know, we have to keep in mind that if they're large companies, they have to comply with federal regulations, and they can't relocate or set up in a city where they think that their employees are going to be subject to discrimination or where their ability to comply with those federal regulations might be hampered.
All right. Thanks, Jennifer. To be clear, a lot of the major companies in this city, including Darnell's company, Florida Blue, already have inclusive policies. However, the city as a whole does not have these laws in place. So what about her comment? Pastor Gundy.
I mean, her comment is on point. When we look at the factor that we must love our neighbors as we love ourselves, we must put those, what we say, in practice. So I think at this particular point in time in our lives in the city of Jacksonville, it is past time for this city to stand up for all of its citizens, regardless of their race, color, creed, their sexual, gender, nationality. It's just time for us to do what's right.
Yazrel has been holding. Yazrel on the east side. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you all doing?
All right, thanks.
Good morning. Hey, Pastor Gundy, I think very well spoken, my beloved brother. One thing I think we also have to look at and making it even more simple, God created all things. No man created himself, nor did they create God, but God created all things. So if a person is gay, then God must have had some influence in that somewhere, whether we like it or not, for that to exist, because nothing would exist if God wouldn't allow it to exist. But my only concern about the bill is to be sure about this bathroom thing, because I have daughters, and as sick as people are today, they will cross dress to go in the bathroom just to rape women. So that would be my only concern about the whole thing. But as far as the whole bill itself, I'm very well I support it very much, because everybody has to be protected under the law. And the thing, one thing real quick that concerns me about this deal is that if a gay person can't go into a store to be serviced and I don't have to serve them because they're gay, then that takes me back to what would happen if I walk in the store as a black man. They can't, it will trickle back to that type of behavior. So I think everybody needs to come in compliance with the law, and nobody should be able to refuse to serve a person if they wanted to be served within that environment.
All right. Thanks for the call. And, you know, just to be clear again, this bill does not require any changes to public bathrooms in the city of Jacksonville. Darnell Smith, this fear over bathrooms comes up again and again,
yes,
although there have been no incidents of anything like that happening in any cities that have this type of legislation, which Jacksonville actually is not trying to do.
That is correct. And that's what we ask folks to look at. Last night I happened to listen to our president provide his farewell speech and his vision of the future. And there was a point in there in which he indicated that often what we do is we go with fears that have been shared by others as to what could happen, rather than looking and listening to the facts of what is actually happening. And so I only ask, because I have a daughter, I have a granddaughter, I have nieces, I have a wife. I would never want those kind of things for them, just like anyone else would want for their loved ones. And so the individuals who we're looking to protect, those who are even transgender as a part of that, let me make it really clear. These folks are good people. They go into the restroom of their identity. And the one thing about North Carolina is where they try to get individuals who may have chosen a particular identity to go into a bathroom that wasn't their identity. And that is where that fear began to come forward. This simply isn't the case as to the people that we're trying to protect. Nonetheless, this isn't what this is about. This is only saying of the protected categories that we currently have, we're adding two other components to that, sexual orientation and certainly gender identity. And that's the focus.
Lots of tweets about this. Here's one. Darnell Smith is my personal hero, tweets a listener. Adam tweets the show, we should do what is legal, ethical, and humane. Here's another tweet. It's amazing to me that only men ever bring up the boogeyman in a dress fear. I've never heard a cis woman, that's a heterosexual woman, express fear of a trans woman. All right, let's go to Doug on the north side. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
So I have a question. Well, I have a question, but I had a statement, too. Pastor Gundy, I think you explained it great when you said that you have bathrooms in your church that have a man symbol and a woman symbol, and that they're available to people that need to use them. But my question is, because of my lack of education on this topic, is why would this not be valid for companies that are like 15 employees or less? Because I would think that if we could get everyone to agree to it, which is what we're talking about, it's a great thing. And I admit that the step of getting the larger companies to do it too. But I just question, why is it the companies that have 15 employees or less not required to do this if that bill?
Okay. Yeah, the exemption for really small companies.
I can't answer that.
Yeah, the focus is the feedback that we continue to get and we've got is that there would be undue burden on a number of small companies. You've heard some of the questions earlier today. If you were part of any of the town hall meetings that Mayor Curry had, and we really appreciate him having those kind of town hall meetings there, the community conversations, those kind of things came up. Small businesses, very fearful of the fact that it would be an undue burden on them. And that is why we went with that legislation of 15 or fewer than 15 employees being excluded. And it's very consistent with federal, state regulations for civil rights laws.
We're going to take a few more of your calls. Lots of you waiting on hold as we talk about the third attempt to update Jacksonville's human rights ordinance with Darnell Smith of Florida Blue and the Jacks Chamber and Pastor R.L. Gundy. Hald is on the north side. Is that your name, Hald? Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hey, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I would simply just like to address this on the basis of right and wrong. And I'm an African American, and I didn't have anything to do with that. And knowing all I know, I wouldn't want to be anything else if I could come back. But when we make civil laws based on choices people make, we're opening up Pandora's box for any and everything that wants to come out. Because I'm not this, but if my sexual preference was for 5-year-old boys and girls, would the city consider making a law for that? You know, for me to practice my perversion on young children. And so the
there's a world of difference between homosexuality and pedophilia. And there's a wealth of data to support that homosexuality, in fact, is not a choice. It's an orientation.
Okay. Well, no, it's a choice, because what the news media keeps from the public is the number of homosexuals that have made the choice to stop doing it. So it's a choice, you know.
Okay.
And what my concern
for the call.
Is,
okay,
is,
and I hear what you're saying. But Pastor Gundy, you have parishioners like Hald, and so do some of your colleagues in the faith community, who believe, even though, as I said, there's a mountain of evidence to document that homosexuality is not, in fact, a choice. But for folks that believe that, and that's a sincerely held belief, how do you talk to them?
You sit down and you do what I've done. You know, I've sat down and I've had classes with my parishioners. I've shared with them the real issues that some people are born gay. Some people are born, I mean, you know, from the text, there's eunuchs, and there's three forms of eunuchs. Those who make some choices, those who didn't make choices, and those. That's not the issue here. The issue is give people their fundamental rights to have a job. I'm an American of African descent. I didn't always have that right to have a job, fairly anyway. And housing, I didn't always have a right to have housing available to me and to not be discriminated against. You know, I was in St. Augustine, and an incident happened with my granddaughter and my wife maybe a year ago, and it was obvious that it was discrimination. So it's still going on.
Yeah.
But we are just simply asking you, and asking the city council, asking this community, if you want to transform lives, if you want to transform communities, we have to do this by connecting leaders, and that's what we're doing. And when you connect leaders and you look at the real issues, you have to make a decision that's in the best interest of everybody. And right now, discrimination is taking place against the LGBT community because of housing, jobs, and public accommodations, and we need to stop this practice.
And as an African-American citizen, Darnell Smith, when you hear other folks call in who are African-American and say, you know, I have no control over being over the color of my skin, but I believe people in the LGBT community are choosing to behave the way they do or choosing their life. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, first I just simply ask the individuals to open their hearts and open their minds. If they've come to a conclusion and there is no doubt in their mind that they're correct, then there's nothing that I can do. But if they are willing to simply open their hearts, open their minds, get facts, listen to people who spend their lives making certain that they study this kind of information and listen to them. And then afterward, if you're still in the same place, then so be it. But we only ask that they open up their minds. I still bring us back. That still isn't what this is about. This is about protections against discrimination.
The bill has been introduced. It's going to go through the committee process. It could be voted on by February 14th, Valentine's Day. What's ahead for your organizations in the next several weeks on this?
From the faith organization, we'll continue to advocate, to stop the discrimination and meet with other faith members and talk. We'll do television. We'll do commercials. We'll talk to anybody. And I'm with what Mr. Donnell said. You know, if we can just get people to sit down and talk to us. And that's what has happened with – that's how we was able to get these 200 faith members to come on board, because they sat down and they took a good look at this, and they looked at the facts. They looked at the reality and said, you know what? You're right. This is wrong. We need to stop the discrimination. We need to stop – give people fair housing and things of that nature.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much for being with us. We were joined by Darnell Smith, Market President for Florida Blue and Board Chair of the Jacks Chamber, and Pastor Gundy of Mount Sinai Baptist Church. Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. It's Fleet Farming, and it's new to the First Coast. That's coming up in our Going Green. But up next, a new exhibit looking at the life of Anne Frank and how you can check it out. We'll be right back.
Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
I'm Joshua Johnson. On the next 1A, the legacy of President Obama. After his farewell address in Chicago, how will you judge his administration? Donald Trump aims to undo much of Obama's legacy, including the Affordable Care Act, the Paris Climate Agreement, and the nuclear deal with Iran. What do you think of what President Obama leaves behind? That's next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Amy Beach was 27 years old when she composed this, the first symphony written and published by an American woman. Coming up, the story of Amy Beach and her Gaelic Symphony from 1894, and we'll hear it from a concert by the Detroit Symphony Orchestra on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, we're proud to announce that WJCT is a participating partner in the upcoming Voices of Hope community initiative. It's organized around a new exhibit coming to Mosh this month, Anne Frank, A History for Today. It's an exhibit, and we've also got a play to tell you about. Here with more, Rebecca Reitman-Bennett, Voices of Hope Programming Chair. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Paul Bercier, Curator at the Mosh, the Museum of Science and History. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thank you.
Rebecca, let's begin with you. As I mentioned, WJCT is part of Voices of Hope. What's it all about?
So Voices of Hope is a wonderful initiative that was inspired by Arlene Wolfson. And she came up with this fantastic idea to enhance the Anne Frank exhibit. So we can look at Anne Frank, who was an incredible, inspiring figure, and see her in our lives today. And what Voices of Hope does is actually bring together over 40 groups. And we're going to be everything ranging from the theater to the play that I'm going to discuss shortly, to panel discussions, to films, to the Jacksonville Symphony bringing a wonderful program.
This is a community-wide effort.
Exactly. It is tremendous. We've been overwhelmed, really, by the amount of community support. And it seems that Anne Frank is the inspiring figure behind it all.
Right. The Diary of Anne Frank is so timeless. Generations of school children, of course, have read it. Let's begin with what's happening at the Mosh. Paul, tell us about the exhibit.
So we have an exhibition, Anne Frank, A History for Today. It will be opening this Friday, and the exhibit will be up through Sunday, February 12th. It comes to us from the Anne Frank Center in New York. They're dedicated to preserving freedom, upholding human rights, and respecting a pluralistic and democratic society. And Mosh is happy to accommodate this exhibition for a month. Mosh, I consider to be a 21st century museum. And by that, I mean that we're not simply a repository for historical artifacts, natural history specimens, or works of art. We are here for the community, and we look at ourselves as a venue for community engagement and conversation about themes that are really relevant to the lives of people in northeastern Florida today. And I think that a lot of what Anne has to say in her diary is directly relevant to events that are happening today.
How so?
Well, how many stories have we heard in the news in the recent past globally about oppression, human rights violations, xenophobia, ethnic cleansing, terrorism, racial profiling, hate crimes, and other forms of social injustice? And many of the threads of her diary speak to those issues today.
So this is a way that the community can participate in an uplifting message, Rebecca, not just by visiting the exhibit at the Mosh, which people should check it out. It's going to be a great exhibit. As Paul said, it opens Friday. But also take in some other performances. What else is going to be happening?
Well, it's tremendous. The Voices of Hope initiative actually began in November with Douglas Anderson's Parade play. And it's actually going to be running through May. I will highlight three. You know, there's over 40 programs, so it's hard. I wish I had all the time to discuss them all. But the three in particular that stand out are Letters from Anne and Martin, which will be here this weekend, a wonderful play that brings to life the words of Anne and Martin Luther King. What a fantastic opportunity that Anne, the exhibit is opening this Friday, and we're celebrating the life of MLK on Monday.
So the play is drawn entirely from Anne Frank's diary and Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail.
Exactly.
Okay.
And we have actors coming in actually from New York who will be performing. And what's especially beautiful about this opportunity is afterwards they will interact with the audience. So we have a performance on Saturday night at the Ritz Theater, which we're encouraging adults to come. And on Sunday we have another performance at the main library at 3 p.m., which is designed for teens and families, and the discussion will be appropriate for that group.
And I didn't realize this, but in linking these two monumental historical figures together, this is a new way to think about both of them. Both Anne Frank and MLK were born in 1929. Mm-hmm. Did not know that.
Yeah.
They both endured bigotry, danger. They held to their ideals despite all the challenges. So what a breakthrough. What a neat idea to put them together in an artistic endeavor like this.
It's amazing. It really is awe-inspiring to think that here they were both really in captivity when they came up with these wonderful messages of hope. Hope for a better world. Hope that we could live in a place without discrimination. So the timing is fantastic. And the other aspect is they're free. These are plays that are free to the community. All people need to do is go to AnneFrankJax.com and go to the calendar section of that website and find the plays and register. We hope it's a sold-out performance twice.
Yes. So two free shows, Saturday the 14th, 8 p.m. at the Ritz, Sunday the 15th, 3 p.m. at the main library, AnneFranksJax.com to reserve your seats. But there's more. What else is happening?
There is more. Just next week, we have our local art historian Cindy Edelman and Terrence Patterson, wonderful musical talent, are coming together on January 18th, and they'll be talking about Anne Frank in art and music. I encourage everyone to attend. And actually, why don't you take it from here, Paul? I know you want to talk about Cindy's contribution to the
exhibit. In addition to the Anne Frank exhibit we have from the Anne Frank Center, we will also have an exhibition running at the same time called Remembering the Holocaust in Art from the collection of Dan and Cindy Edelman. And it's a new signature exhibition of photographs, woodcuts, lithographs, mixed media works of art. There are a total of 17 works of art by 8 artists that represent the Holocaust. They date from 1945 to 2005. And Dan and Cindy Edelman hope that these works of art will inspire visitors to help create a more inclusive and forgiving community as a result.
So again, if you're just tuning in, the Voices of Hope initiative is bringing the message of Anne Frank to this entire First Coast. You can take part in any number of ways. You can go see the new exhibit at the Mosh. You can go see the play Letters from Anne and Martin coming up at the Ritz and the library, a free performance. Or you can go to AnneFrankJax.com to learn more and be part of this. As I mentioned, WJCT, a partner in Voices of Hope. Did I miss anything, Rebecca?
I would love to mention one more thing.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity. We also have a tremendous performance that I want to give special thanks to the Jacksonville Symphony. On January 28th, Violins of Hope is going to be here at 8 p.m., and it's a powerful concert that includes 16 violins that were recovered and restored from the Holocaust and transported from Israel to demonstrate the resilience of the human spirit and the power of music. What's incredible is that this is going to be a very moving performance, to say the least. But there's also an opportunity to actually hear from the violin restorer himself. And that's going to be on January 24th at Mosh. So I know I'm throwing out a lot of dates, and there's a lot of wonderful opportunities. I do encourage your audience to go to AnneFrankJax.com for more. This is just a little peek into all there is. There's
so much happening,
so
and
much.
This goes through February, so you'll have lots of opportunities. Thank you so much for being with us. Rebecca Reitman Bennett, Voices of Hope Programming Chair, Paul Bercier's curator at the Mosh. What excitement as this comes to town. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, when kids would say, Mr. Buck, how do I get into broadcasting? Start smoking. Joe Buck didn't follow this advice his dad, Hall of Fame announcer Jack Buck, gave to other kids, but Joe did go on to become an Emmy Award-winning sportscaster himself. He has a new memoir. We'll talk about his good luck, his childhood, and why he thinks some fans can't stand him. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
This Going Green segment is brought to you by the Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville.
All right, finally this hour, a local woman is hoping to unite the community and offset some negative environmental effects of food production by creating a small community farm here in our area. It's called Fleet Farming. Now, this is a first of its kind for our region. Melissa Beaudry fills us in. It's today's Going Green, and good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here, and congratulations. You received a $5,000 grant recently to bring Fleet Farming to Northeast Florida. This is the first time Jacksonville will see this, although other cities have started to do this. What is Fleet Farming?
Yeah, so Fleet Farming was started in Orlando, Florida in 2013 by an organization called Ideas for Us. And it really stemmed out of one of their programs called The Hive, where they were looking at the five pillars of sustainability and how they could address food waste and the issues around our global food system, and really also the environmental impacts of watering your front lawn. And so they were like, well, how can we kind of address both? And Fleet Farming came to be the program that addressed taking over the very overwatered green lawns that are great, but also are somewhat of an environmental waste, and then also creating food for the community to enjoy.
Right. Our lawns look pretty, but they're not so good for our river and right. for the environment. They send pollution into the river. They waste water. So this is so interesting. Homeowners give up their lawn, essentially, and their front lawn becomes a small farm.
Right. Yeah.
It's called a farmlet.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So how do you do this? How does this work?
Yeah, so the farmlets are cultivated by a group of volunteers. We go out on bicycles during swarm rides, or what we call them, on Sunday mornings biweekly, and we go and cultivate the lawns and turn them into a beautiful garden. And they'll look different depending on what the environment of the yard is. So sometimes it might be a raised bed, sometimes it might be directly in the ground. But it's really a great way to grow food for the community to enjoy. And the other great aspect is that the homeowner is able to share crop and be able to go and pick greens and pick all the produce that they want since it's on their front yard. And the volunteers that come out and are part of the swarm rides are also able to buy the greens at a reduced price.
You're going to start planting soon. With the grant, you're going to launch four gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Have you identified your four homeowners and your four lawns?
We have not. What's been great is we've had overwhelming support from the community. And so we'll be starting the first Fleet Farming Hub in Riverside, the neighborhood of Riverside, Avondale.
I'm shocked. Yeah. Shocked to hear that this is starting in Riverside. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, and partially that's because it takes that eyes on the street approach. And that's where I live. So it makes sense for
makes
me.
Makes sense.
But we already are slated to have our second hub start at Jack's Beach, and the third to start in Springfield. And all three of those Fleet Farming hubs will look very different, but we do have those initiatives set up. And so we're having an event on the 18th, and that's really when we'll start to figure out exactly who those first four farms in Riverside will be.
But basically, when you go by the house of a Fleet Farm, instead of a front yard, you'll see a big vegetable garden.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the idea behind this is to offset the carbon footprint from global food production, because food has to often travel thousands of miles, which contributes to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to get locally grown food to local people as easily with a light environmental footprint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've through research, we've found that an average plate of food travels about 18,000 or 1,800 miles to get to your plate. And overall, the global industrial food system can be attributed to about 30% of the global warming and related CO2 emissions just from the travel it takes and all of the different aspects of food production. So this is a great way to build community, reduce those emissions, and just have fun and eat good food in the process.
How can people be part of Fleet Farming? You said there's an event coming up.
There is. So we're going to have our big community event because there's been such an outpouring of support. And I really want to thank the Public Trust Environmental Legal Institute of Florida, who is the funder and is really the organization bringing Fleet Farming to Jacksonville. I'm just the worker bee in the process. And so with them as the funder and partner, we're going to have this event at the Green Drinks, which you just had Tito, the organizer, on yesterday. And it will take place at Hobnob on the 18th, January 18th, next Wednesday. And anyone who's interested in being a part of Fleet Farming, whether it's having a farmland on your front yard or volunteering for the swarm rides, or you have compost that you think would be great, or seedlings, or any aspect of creativity or innovation that you think could be a part of this program, I invite you to come out to the event on the 18th at Hobnob, and let's meet.
She's Melissa Beaudry, bringing Fleet Farming to the First Coast. Look out for the farmlets maybe in your neighborhood, and keep us posted. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or our app. 1A's up next with a look at the President's Farewell. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.